Section 3, Statehood and Early Government. As you read, look for the causes of the War of 1812, how the outcome of the Battle of New Orleans was both a national triumph for the United States and a personal victory for Andrew Jackson, the continuing political and cultural divide between Anglos and Creoles in the new state of Louisiana, how a corrupt bargain drew Louisiana citizens into national politics, terms, impressment, Battle of New Orleans, Electoral College, corrupt bargain. A committee was appointed in 1811 to draft Louisiana's first constitution. After several months of work, the document was translated from French into English and sent to the U.S. Congress for approval. Louisiana formally became the 18th state in the Union on April 30, 1812. Although this was an important moment, the uncertainty and unrest had not come to an end for the new state's people. In fact, less than 3 months after Louisiana became a state, President James Madison declared war on Great Britain, and the War of 1812 began. The War of 1812. The war between Great Britain and the United States began because of issues that had never been fully resolved at the end of the American Revolution. For one thing, Great Britain had never quite accepted the idea of American independence. The British resented the colonies for rebelling and believed that they would eventually come under English control again. Accordingly, Great Britain often took provocative or confrontational actions against the United States. During this time, Great Britain had the world's largest and most powerful navy. However, being a British sailor was a hard and miserable job, and the British had a difficult time recruiting volunteers. One way they gained sailors was to overtake American ships at sea and press or force the common sailors into service. This practice was called impressment and was one source of tension between the two nations. The British had also agreed to abandon their forts near the borders of the United States at the end of the American Revolution, but they failed to honor this agreement. In fact, the British were using forts located along the U.S. border with Canada to incite or stir up and support Native Americans who began to attack settlers moving into frontier areas. These mounting tensions ultimately resulted in a declaration of war. Once the war began, the British initiated a three-part strategy to defeat the United States. They first sought to take possession of cities and ports along the East Coast. Later, they planned to do the same thing along the coastal areas of the southern states. Finally, they planned to take control of the Gulf Coast and gain control of the all-important Mississippi River and its port at New Orleans. Despite 2 years of fighting, by mid-1814, very little territorial control had been gained or lost by either side. The most spectacular event from the U.S. perspective occurred when the British took control of the nation's capital city, Washington, D.C., in August 1814. The British burned many government buildings, including the White House. Despite the spectacular nature of this event, British forces did not keep control of the capital. Discouraged, both sides entered into peace negotiations. Those talks took place at Ghent in the European country of Belgium. In spite of this development, both sides continued to make and enact plans that focused on control of the Gulf Coast and Mississippi River. Andrew Jackson and the Battle of New Orleans. Andrew Jackson, who would later become President of the United States, had a deep personal grudge against the British. His father died before he was born, and his mother and two brothers died during the American Revolution, leaving Jackson an orphan. During the war, he was captured by the British. A British officer ordered his young prisoner to shine his boots. When Jackson refused, the officer struck him in the face with a saber, scarring him for life. Jackson looked at the War of 1812 as an opportunity for vengeance, or payback for the damage done to him by the British. After the Revolution, Jackson settled in Tennessee where he practiced law, became involved in politics, and bought and operated a plantation called the Hermitage. He also became a major general in the Tennessee militia. Jackson led his Tennessee troops into the War of 1812. He was particularly successful in fighting against Creek Indians who had been attacking settlers in Alabama. Jackson achieved a major victory against the Creek warriors at the Battle of Horseshoe Bend. As a result of that victory, the Creek Nation ceded nearly 22 million acres to the United States. These successes gained Jackson the title of Major General in the U.S. Army. As such, he was ordered to take his troops toward New Orleans in late 1814 in anticipation of a British attack. Advantages and disadvantages for both sides. The British were indeed on their way to Louisiana. A force of approximately 8,000 well-equipped and experienced troops was to be led by General Sir Edward Michael Pakenham. His troops arrived nearly 2 weeks after their leader. Once Pakenham did join his troops in late December 1814, he was outraged by the position they had taken. He realized that the narrow strip of land the British had occupied gave their enemy undeniable advantages. In short, the British were stuck between the Mississippi River and a cypress swamp, leaving them very little room to maneuver or move against the American forces. If the British troops' poor location gave Jackson and his forces an advantage, he had many other disadvantages to overcome. Jackson had less than half the number of troops the British had. His soldiers were often poorly dressed, so much so that the British called them the Dirty Shirts. Jackson's motley, mixed, different from one another soldiers, also had inferior weapons and very little ammunition. Still, Jackson managed to merge U.S. Army soldiers with local militia units and volunteers from Tennessee, Kentucky, and Mississippi. He also enlisted a group of pirates led by the notorious, widely known as disreputable, Jean Lafitte. Jackson was originally reluctant to accept Lafitte's offer of assistance, but his need for ammunition and powder led him to change his mind. The fighting begins. Fighting began between Great Britain and the United States 2 days before Christmas and continued in short bursts into the new year. The major battle between the two forces, which took place early on the morning of January 8, 1815, is known as the Battle of New Orleans. Pakenham's battle plan was quite complex and depended on coordination and precision to succeed. Unfortunately for the British, many things went wrong that morning. Even nature seemed to be on the American side. Pakenham and his soldiers were in the middle of a field approaching the American lines when the early morning fog began to disappear. This made the British easy targets for Jackson's troops, who were protected by a fortified position behind a canal. A victory for the United States. The battle was spectacular in its outcome, but the heaviest fighting took place in less than an hour. During that very brief but bloody period, British casualties, people killed, injured, or captured in battle, reached 2,000. At least 400 of those were killed. Pakenham and several other members of the senior command of the British forces were among the dead. In contrast, Jackson reported only 7 killed and 6 wounded during the morning's engagement. This lopsided American victory came as a surprise to everyone involved. Having no choice, the British surrendered to Jackson and began withdrawal of their troops. After overseeing the British withdrawal back to their ships in the Gulf, Jackson returned to New Orleans on January 21st, a bona fide or genuine American military hero. The news of his overwhelming victory against the British spread rapidly. In a matter of weeks, Jackson rose to national fame and prominence as the hero of the Battle of New Orleans. Ironically, Great Britain and the United States had signed a peace treaty at Ghent, Belgium, on December 24, 1814. Technically, then, this major American military victory took place after the war's official end. Still, Jackson's defeat of the British mattered, particularly in the United States. Being undeniably defeated reminded the British that the Americans would fight and would retain their independence as a nation. This outcome of the War of 1812 has led some historians to refer to it as the Second War for American Independence. Early statehood, distinctive but American. Claiborne referred to the people who had lived in Louisiana before it became part of the United States as the ancient population. Indeed, Louisiana's people, who identified as Creoles, felt they had little in common with the Americans who migrated to Louisiana in droves after 1812. Yet time and common purpose caused the two ethnic groups, Creoles and Americans, to work together when necessary. The Battle of New Orleans is a clear example of that kind of cooperation. The creation of the state's first constitution also melded or blended the French language and Creole outlook into a document based on Kentucky's constitution. Claiborne was elected the first state governor. After that, the office shifted regularly between a Creole and an American. Until the late 1820s, politics in Louisiana retained this distinctive aspect. For the most part, the state's people saw themselves as citizens of the United States, but also saw themselves as different from the rest of the nation's people. Their concerns remained focused on local issues, that is, until the contested outcome of the presidential election of 1824 drew Louisiana directly into a national political dispute. The rise of Andrew Jackson and the corrupt bargain. Historian Robert Remini has written that Jackson's victory over the British in 1815 transformed the general into a towering hero who became a symbol of what was best in American society. The nation was changing. As Americans moved further and further west, an idea began to develop about the benefits of the frontier experience. Simply put, many Americans believe that the process of moving west, making one's way in the world, and overcoming the difficulties of settling new land gave people experiences that made them strong and capable. These frontier Americans came to believe that they brought special qualities and strengths to the nation. This set of beliefs came into contrast with older ones in the bitterly contested presidential election of 1824. There were four major candidates in the race: John Quincy Adams of Massachusetts, William H. Crawford and Henry Clay, both of Kentucky, and Andrew Jackson of Tennessee. Jackson won the popular vote by a wide margin, but did not get enough votes in the Electoral College, the group that formally elects the president and vice president, to confirm his victory. None of the other candidates did either. Thus, the decision about who would become president went into the U.S. House of Representatives for the second time in the nation's history. The process in the House of Representatives was chaotic, and many also felt it was unfair. Henry Clay had finished fourth, so his candidacy did not advance in the House, but because Clay was Speaker of the House at the time, he was believed to have undue, more than is reasonable, influence. Crawford had become very ill shortly before the election, and while he too was under consideration in the House, his ill health doomed his chances. Thus, the contest came down to Jackson and Adams. Henry Clay decided to give his support to Adams, shifting the votes he could influence. This shift gave Adams a victory in the House of Representatives, and he became president in 1824. Shortly thereafter, Adams named Clay as his Secretary of State, an office that was seen as the training ground for the presidency. This outcome led many to charge that Adams and Clay had engaged in a corrupt bargain, and this became a nickname for the election's outcome. Many people in the nation were outraged at this turn of events, Jackson not least among them. Many in Louisiana strongly supported Jackson, especially because of his history of protecting New Orleans in the War of 1812. When the presidential election of 1828 took place, voter turnout tripled nationwide, and Jackson won the presidency in a landslide. When he went to Washington for his inauguration in early 1829, thousands of common people followed to see their frontier hero inaugurated. Jackson was the first frontier American to become president, and he was hailed as a hero of the common man. His two terms as president were marked by many controversies, but one outcome was not in dispute. Jackson changed the way Americans felt about the nation's politics. Nowhere was this more the case than in Louisiana. While the state's politics would retain many distinctive aspects after 1824, Louisiana's voters became much more interested in national affairs. In the same year that Jackson was inaugurated president, the Spanish priest Pere Antoine was laid to rest, and with him an important reminder of the city's French and Spanish colonial heritage. Creoles and Americans would continue to compete for political power and economic gain, but both groups would also unite to defend the institution of slavery, which had become a critical part of the state's agricultural economy by the end of the 1820s. Special feature: Jean Lafitte, pirate or hero? One of our state's most valuable treasures is Jean Lafitte National Historical Park and Preserve in South Louisiana. Made up of six sites, the park might be considered a treasure trove of nature, history, and culture. The man for whom the park is named, however, is considered by some more pirate than patriot. Born in France in 1780, Jean Lafitte would find his way to the city of New Orleans and eventually into the history of Louisiana. The family name Lafitte was also spelled Lafitte. Before the War of 1812, Lafitte possibly ran a blacksmith shop with his brother. If so, this shop would have been just a front for his real business, which was smuggling goods and slaves stolen in the Caribbean by pirates. Lafitte based his activities in an area south of New Orleans called Barataria Bay, where he and his men would attack trade ships. In 1814, the U.S. Navy destroyed his base, but Lafitte escaped. Everything changed, however, when Great Britain's war with the United States threatened New Orleans. A British commander offered Lafitte $30,000 and the position of captain in the Royal Navy to fight alongside the British and attack New Orleans. Lafitte played along with the British, but when he saw his chance, he warned Governor Claiborne about the British plan of attack. Lafitte went to General Andrew Jackson and offered his services. Jackson accepted the offer, and Lafitte, along with his men, fought bravely in the Battle of New Orleans in 1815. President James Madison even pardoned Lafitte and his men for their crimes. After the battle was over, however, Lafitte returned to his old ways of pirating. He set up an outpost called Campeche, which is where Galveston, Texas is today. The post did not last long, but Lafitte continued his life of piracy until the end. He died in Mexico around 1823, near his last base on Mujeres Island. Do you think Jean Lafitte should be remembered as a pirate or a hero?